tangle the legs. And look, Steve Bruce was right, Long gets straight up. Good performance, and he made the difference. Long stays on side, clever, cute finish. Clever finish in the corner, and they're not stopping that. Look at his eye on the ball there. He doesn't take it off at once. It's a very, very good finish.
Well, Shane Long doesn't celebrate after scoring against West Brom, his former club. Alan Shearer on Match of the Day stated, "Why on earth did West Brom sell him?" Wes Houlihan enjoys another fine game for Norwich City, while Ireland will embark on several summer friendlies ahead of the Euro qualifiers. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. You can mail the show. It's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also Talking Sport Org on Twitter. That's @TalkingSportOrg on Twitter, and it's facebook.com/TalkingSport.org. We'll also have our new LOI Goalmouth segment later on the programme, League of Ireland show. We'll also be talking to Stephen Beattie of Bohemians, and we've just witnessed the first Bows Rovers Dublin derby of the season, so it's really exciting stuff. Well, to kick things off on the programme tonight, I'm delighted to be joined by Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie and Reuters journalist Philip O'Connor. Philip, welcome back to the show. We haven't spoken in quite a while. There's been so much European football action, particularly towards the end of the playoffs and all that kind of thing. No doubt you've been a very busy man. We've had the likes of Iceland and that, much the talking point.
Yeah, it kept me very, very busy there, Dave. The Swedes, of course, faced Portugal at the same time as Iceland were also in the mix there against Croatia. So I was pretty busy. There was sort of huge interest, not least from an Irish perspective, about how Iceland managed to get sort of such a powerful team together with only 300,000 people there. So, and then after that, of course, I nipped off to the Winter Olympics for 3 weeks. So as you say, there's been far too much distraction from football. So now it's nice to be back on track.
It is indeed nice to be back on track. I want to start, lads, by looking at the most recent announcement in terms of the Irish international football team, Pete, and Ireland will take on Turkey in a, or sorry, Ireland will take on Italy after Turkey in a friendly in Craven Cottage on the 31st of May. Martin O'Neill did make the point that he wanted stiff opposition for these friendlies, but, you know, we spoke about it on last week's programme that ranking points are at stake. But having said that, it will be a good test for the lads, particularly at the end of the season. I know Martin O'Neill wants to spread the games out and try a lot of different players.
Yeah, he's been saying that, but I think there'll be, I don't know how much of a spread he'll actually get up to. You know, I think he's looking for a bit of continuity, and he's also looking to try and get certain sections of the team that might gel well together. And you're only going to get that against the better sides. You know, if we manage to qualify for the European qualifiers, then maybe, you know, for the European Championship through this whole qualifying situation, then the ratings will probably look after themselves after that. So I'd say he'd be less worried about them than maybe the FAI are.
Philip, taking on Turkey at home and then followed by that friendly in Craven Cottage against Italy, we always talk about what do we learn from these friendlies. And we have had a couple of friendlies in the past that I think we haven't learned a single scrap from. But going up against quality opposition will tell us a lot, particularly about the defence and the structure of the team.
Yeah, quite simply, Dave, you don't learn anything by playing against bad teams, right? So, I mean, really, if you want to learn anything about the team, if you want to learn anything about your players, their technical capabilities, their character and that kind of thing, you have to play against the good teams. A good example is Sweden, where I'm based. They're kind of in a situation now similar to Ireland. They have a new 50,000-seater stadium and they have to face good opposition if they're going to fill it. You're not going to bring over Bulgaria and fill a stadium with 50,000 people to watch that. But having said that, I've seen a lot of the younger Swedish players come out, the likes of Kacan Iklic now, who plays for Fulham alongside Damien Duff. They've come out, they played against Argentina, they played against England, and they're definitely learning more from these games than you will against the Minnows. I think it's an excellent idea. The very idea of playing against a team with Pirlo in it at the moment, I think is fantastic, because you can learn so much just from watching him play in the centre midfield. He's going to figure heavily at the World Cup for Italy, and the Turkish team are never to be underestimated either. Turkish football is certainly on the rise there. We've seen it with Galatasaray in the Champions Champions League, who gave Chelsea a run for their money in the first leg there. And there's going to be a few of those players, a good few Fenerbahce players in there. So it's definitely, it's a much better idea to play against sort of, you know, competitive opposition than rather just going through the motions.
Yeah, you mentioned Sweden there, and we have seen it in their new home stadium, Philip. They have had the movie star, the superstar friendlies. You've seen the fantastic Ibrahimovic volleys that beat Joe Hart in the England goal and stuff like that. Is it fair to say, though, that with big friendlies, there's a pressure to play the best team, to be competitive? I mean, Martin O'Neill, Philip, has said that he wanted to try out players.
Yeah, I think that, like, if they're good enough, they're old enough, right? I'd much rather see, it tells me much more about a player to throw him in against Italy, to throw him in against Turkey, than it does to throw him in against Bulgaria or Poland or Iceland or any of the other sort of, you know, Poland will put bums on seats at the Aviva or in Craven Cottage indeed. But what are you going to learn about your team from that, you know? The great thing about Italy is it's a known quantity. You're putting your players up against players like Pirlo with reputations, you know? So I think that it's much more, you know, from that point of view, I think it focuses the mind of the players better. You know, there's a friend of mine, he has one cap for Sweden, and that came against Germany. He played 8 minutes against them, you know, so there's a kind of a credibility there that he wouldn't have got if he'd played against Albania. You know, nothing bad about these things, but I definitely think that it sort of helps focus. And like, I think the whole ratings thing and that kind of thing, the FIFA world rankings and the UEFA rankings and all that, personally I think there's too much weight placed on these things, you know, because I mean, nations like Ireland are going to slide up and down. It's going to be a generational thing. We're not going to be in the top six forever as such. And we have to learn to deal with that. It's also not the disadvantage that it previously was, because there's so many spaces open and going to the Euros. Of course, when it comes to the World Cup, that might be slightly different. But these tournaments are ever expanding, so it should be getting easier rather than more difficult. So you can actually afford to take a few risks. And of course, we have to remember that our record against Italy through the years is not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad indeed. And Pete, Craven Cottage, we've seen the Irish team take on the likes of Oman and Colombia there. And, you know, the atmosphere has been a little bit, I suppose, up and down. It hasn't been an electrifying, obviously there was no real home team of it, but it was, I suppose, a lot of people just going to the match for the evening that was in it. I think we played Colombia. It was a very nice evening on that. No doubt this match will grab the attention of not just Irish and Italian fans that are living in London, but a lot of neutrals will want to go in and see, particularly Italy, a team that are going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I think there will be a certain amount of that. Not so much as, you know, because they've picked a small ground in Craven Cottage, because it will, they'll almost certainly fill it. And they won't have the, you know, the costs do come into this as well. So the FAI are, you know, they aren't going to book the Emirates because, you know, they probably wouldn't have filled it. And they're probably cost an awful lot more money. But I think they will fill it. There'll probably be a good atmosphere there. That, you know, I'd say there'll be a great Irish crowd there. And they'll just lift it up. You know, the same as if, you know, the rugby teams go to London, the provincial teams, you'll have loads of people coming out to support them. So it's the same sort of thing. It's a small ground. They'll fill it. And hopefully, as Philip has said, we'll learn something from playing against quality players. You know?
And Pete, the first game will be, of course, against Turkey at home in Aviva Stadium. And a lot of the things that Martin O'Neill have said, we've learned lessons from the Serbia clash. This will be something along those lines, going against a team with a lot of quality players.
Yeah, the Turks are very strong. I mean, if all you have to do is look at the fanatical way that the Turkish fans support their team, it means that every small kid in Turkey just wants to play for Turkey. And so there's a huge emphasis on the game out there. And they are a very big country. I think sometimes we lose sight of that with some very, very big cities. So, you know, they'll always come. They're always there, thereabouts. They're good at holding on to the ball. They always have a few very technically excellent players, particularly going forward. They break very well. So if we're not solid at the back, then, you know, we're going to struggle against them, you know.
Philip, there's a rumour going around that we're going to be going to the USA and perhaps tying down dates, pre-World Cup dates, with Costa Rica and Portugal, you know, kind of serving as a warm-up match for these countries that have big challenges ahead of them. That'll be great for the lads, but from a player's point of view, Philip, I don't know, do many players like travelling distances at the end of the season? They just like to go off on their holidays.
Yeah, I think most fellas would prefer to sort of, you know, pull up the tent and head off to Spain or to Greece, because, you know, the holidays for an elite football player at the moment, the holidays actually aren't that long, you know, so pretty much by the end of June, by the end of the World Cup, guys will be looking at going back to work, you know, for Scottish and English clubs who are involved in the early rounds of European competition, they can happen, you know, middle to late July, you know, so the break really isn't very long at all. It's a long season in the UK. In one way, we're kind of lucky that we don't have players at the absolute top clubs. clubs because they're not playing Champions League week in, week out. They're not playing internationals week in, week out. So in one way, it's good. In another way, I'd like to see them play against Portugal and Costa Rica. I think Costa Rica have drawn against England. So they're going to be looking for that kind of the British slash Irish test, the slightly more sort of physical, hard battle for 90 minutes kind of thing. I think that's probably what they're looking for there. Portugal would like to sort of, they'll play against Ireland because basically they'll get to own the ball for 60% of the game and see if they can create anything. I mean, for Ireland, this sort of slew of friendlies, I mean, Costa Rica are actually quite a good side to watch as well. It's brilliant for an Irish fan, I have to say. Anybody who has the possibility to go and see Andrea Pirlo, do it now. He's not getting any younger. If you have a chance to go and see Cristiano Ronaldo play international football, I saw that Portuguese team up very close here in Stockholm, and they really are. There's some outstanding footballers in that team, and Ronaldo's about the best of them. So, you know, again, these are things, these are times that you're going to learn about the players. O'Neill and Keane are kind of on an upswing at the moment, right? Players are going to be prepared to make sacrifices that maybe they weren't prepared to do in terms of American tours beforehand.
But even in the recent friendly, Philip, we've seen, I think we were talking about on the programme 2 weeks ago, that it was the first time I think we had an international soccer friendly where it was almost a clean bill of health and no last pullouts. And that was unique from an Irish point of view.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, guys don't really want to, like, the longer that administration goes on, you kind of know what you can expect from it. You kind of know if you're in with a chance of starting or not. But at the moment, everybody's still in this honeymoon period where they still haven't a chance to impress the boss. They still have a chance to get on the right side of Roy Keane. They also have a chance to get on the wrong side of Roy Keane. And that's not anything that somebody wants to do. And they don't want to mark their own card in that way, you know. So I'd say we'll be able to put in a pretty, pretty strong squad now in these the two friendlies that are confirmed and the two that are rumoured to happen. So I do think that they're going to be, for once, I mean, you know, my opinions, I've said it on this show many times, the pointless friendlies are just the bane of my life. I can't stand them. But to me, there is actually a point to these friendlies, and I do think that we can learn something from them.
Pete, Martin O'Neill made the point that he actually seen it from the club's point of view, and that these friendlies, as Philip would say, would be the bane of any of the players' lives, of the managers' lives. But it's a little bit different this time with Martin O'Neill. He has come out saying that, well, there's a suggestion that he might have kind of picked two squads, one to play the European games against the likes of Turkey and the match in Craven Cottage against Italy, and then maybe another squad to go over to America on the US tour, which would spread it around a lot. And he said he has to put the players first, and they're the first priority, and their welfare, and, you know, be very clever with that. Whereas I think when Trapattoni was in charge, Pete, we had a situation where if the best players weren't there playing in these kind of games, they have an awful chance of losing their place.
Absolutely. Now, I think with Trapp, he had more of a monastic approach to the game and to keeping everybody in line. I think, you know, O'Neill and Keane will have a more open-minded view, but they will be nonetheless, they will be still very strict and tough with guys. Whether, you know, picking two squads, you definitely wouldn't want to send a weaker squad over to the States to play against Portugal, because you'd get dismantled if you did. Interesting. It'd be interesting to see where the games are played. You know, for instance, if they bring them to Boston, they'll probably play it in Fenway Park, which is they probably won't, but because Liverpool are going there. But they'll play in where the New England Revolution play in Foxborough. So that's a pretty big ground. But yeah, it depends. And it depends on the time as well, whether and how hot it'll be. The Costa Rica match won't be anything like as tough as the Portuguese, because the Portuguese will be more physical, as well as being bloody good footballers, as Philip said, you know, and see Ronaldo, and that'll be great. So for the diaspora, it'll be great. But I'd say O'Neill and Keane won't take it on unless they have a very definite plan in their head about what they're going to do beforehand and who they're going to bring.
Yeah, Philip, in terms of the squad that we could potentially bring to this match, it would be a chance for maybe an expanded squad of younger players coming in there. We were talking about the likes of Eunan O'Kane maybe coming in, the likes of Chris McCann, lads that might not have been there before. A real chance for them to get in the squad. I know Jack Grealish, that League One superstar that will be probably near enough the first team of Aston Aston Villa next season, he was making the point that he'd like to be a candidate to go on that tour if they are going. It's a real chance here for a lot of new players to show what they can do.
It's an excellent opportunity, and I think O'Neill is making all the right noises by saying, oh, you know, I could nearly bring two squads and that kind of thing. That reassures an awful lot of managers in an awful lot of clubs that, okay, you know, O'Neill, he's a club manager, he's one of us, he's not going to sort of, you know, flog our players to death. Now, I think it's going to be a different kettle of fish when he gets over there and he says, right, we're playing Portugal. I think you're going to see a lot of the good players starting. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of the national team. For the likes of Jack Grealish and for Younan and these guys, this is a huge opportunity for them, right? They're not going to get a World Cup out of it. If there was a World Cup, they wouldn't be going. But what they are going to get is the possibility of a game against World Cup opposition. They're going to be in the shop window. Fellas who are at clubs, okay, Aston Villa are a big enough club, and certainly historically they're a very big club. But guys who are looking to go, you know, to the Chelseas of this world, looking to catch the eye of the bigger agents, maybe some Dutch club or something like this, this is probably the only opportunity they have. So both for themselves and for their current clubs, this can be both, you know, both sort of playing wise and commercially, this could be a very, very good tour for them. And I honestly hope that O'Neill does take maybe 30 or 32 players, and I hope that maybe he might take 3 or 4 from the League of Ireland as well, because I think there are players there who could probably do a job.
Yeah, they'd be really making a statement, and it would be huge for League of Ireland as well if that was to happen. It all remains to be seen. Peter, Ireland, the word is and reports are that Ireland are going to be taking on Germany in Gelsenkirchen. Of course, the place where we were knocked out of Euro 88 by Vin Kiefs, I think it was, and a curling shot, the ball spinning, Paddy Bonner couldn't hold it kind of thing. You're actually at that match back in 88.
I was, yeah. It was an amazing place, you know. The stadium in Gelsenkirchen is kind of like in the middle of parkland, and it's not like on, you know, like a lot of the in the UK and that, where the stadiums are at the you know, the down at the end of the street type of thing. This is, you know, you get a buses out to the parkland, and it's miles from everywhere. But it was an amazing stadium. It was an amazing day with the Dutch supporters and the Irish supporters at that particular time. And it's a fine stadium. And I know that Germany have played internationals there themselves before. It's hard to imagine when you say 1988. I kind of hard to remember that, or figure out that it's that long ago. But there was only 8 teams in that tournament that time. So, and I still think, and a lot of the guys who were out there with me, still think that was the closest we may ever come to winning something, that we could really have won that tournament with any little bit of luck, you know, really could have.
Yeah. Philip, would you go along with that? Because it was a terrific tournament, and Gelsenkirchen might not be great memories for Irish fans that we lost to the Dutch that day through a sucker punch goal. You know, it was painful. I mean, the Dutch were fantastic, Philip, in that tournament. But it would be great to go and try to get a result there. It's no doubt a good place for fans to go.
It's a brilliant place. I mean, any place, football is all about history and it's all about possibilities. And the idea that we could go back there and right a historical wrong, you know, I mean, I honestly think about 1988, it came a little bit early for us. If we had had that little bit more big tournament experience, that maybe we wouldn't have rode our luck as much, and maybe Kieft wouldn't have scored that goal. But that said, Peter's entirely right. I mean, that was back in the days when the European Championship was an 8-team tournament. The only teams that were there had every right to be there. And we were, you know, we were there about. We played some very, very good. We provided very, very difficult opposition for Russia and for the Dutch, and of course we beat the English there. So I think that, you know, to be able to go back there, you know, so many years later, it's going to be very, very difficult. That German team are absolutely outstanding. That said, they are very, very fragile. So if you can frighten them a little bit, you can beat them, all right. But I think it's going to be a very, very, it's a big ask away from home.
It is indeed. Well, listen, Peter Kelly and Philip O'Connor, thanks a million for joining me on the Why Big Football Show. We'll do it all again very, very soon. You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. It's all about the League of Ireland. It's all about Goal.com, a brand new League of Ireland show which you can follow online. Check out hashtag LOI, the League of Ireland Goalmouth, and we'll be here every week for the best action in domestic Irish soccer. I'm Dave O'Grady. We're going to be talking to Ryan Kelly and Ronan Murphy of Goal Ireland shortly, but first I have something very special. From Ireland to the USA, to Canada, to Puerto Rico, to Iceland, and back to Ireland, this professional has really had a cocktail of football action. Stephen Beattie, thanks a million for joining us on the show. I'll talk about your extraordinary careers shortly, but first I want to have a look at the first Bowes Rovers derby of the season. I suppose you're for yourself disappointed with the defeat, but I know a lot of people were happy with Bowes' performance. I know, I think Owen Heary was quite happy with it. A cracking game, but at the same time, no doubt, it's difficult to give first blood to Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, it's obviously not ideal to give them first blood, and that was my first Dublin derby. Obviously, want to start off with a win. But it's part of the reason why I came back, really, to playing games like that, that sort of atmosphere, that sort of intensity. Overall, brilliant experience. But no, we're very disappointed with the result. As you said, I thought we played well. With the goal disallowed, we feel wrongly for offside. And for their penalty, the linesman gave a throw for Rovers. It was never a throw. Even the Rovers fans walked away, and they ended up getting the penalty off that. So we lost 3-1. Not we lost, simple as, but we felt we had a decent performance to at least get a point. But still a relatively new team, learning curve. It was only our first defeat. We went undefeated all pre-season, and first couple of games in the Cup of the League. So still plenty of positives, and we're going to move on and obviously train tonight. We're ready for Dundalk now on Friday.
Exactly. And a lot has been made of the fantastic Bowes support that you had the other night. It's great so early in the League of Ireland season. Disappointing that it wasn't televised. I know a lot of Irish football fans would have loved to have watched this match, but the support from your point of view was great. And that kind of atmosphere will only bring people back to watching your games.
Absolutely. I've never experienced that. And as you mentioned, the countries I've been around before. Well, I've never ever experienced an atmosphere like that in my football career to date. Both sets of fans were top drawer all night. Well, obviously the home fans, outstanding the Rovers fans for most. Even when we were losing, we were down with 2 goals. You could still hear the Bowes fans roaring encouragement. We did something right on the pitch, you know. And obviously your 12th man behind you and a packed stand. And obviously you want to reward them with 3 points, but you can't get the 3 points, at least a good performance there. And as you said, hopefully you get more people coming back to games and bringing a couple of more. I felt we definitely didn't let ourselves down, which is the main thing. And as I said, there was loads at the draw of the game too. So it wasn't if there was just Bowes fans coming for the big derby. And that's it. I could see us having big crowds of Daily Mail shirt all year. And as you know, we travel well as well with our supporters. So it's brilliant to play in front of week in, week out. And hopefully you have a good season together now, off on the pitch, you know.
It's been a good start to your career, Stephen, at Bowes. I think you scored in a big win over Bray in the Cup. It must be very different for you to come back here and play in Ireland from what you've experienced, but to have such a positive start, it must be thrilling.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the start I've had personally and as a team. I'm playing in a position, I'm playing wide right, which I'm still getting a bit used to. But the fact that I'm playing 90 minutes in the top league of Ireland every week in, week out, I can't complain whatsoever. I'm actually enjoying myself down out wide, getting crosses in, kind of adding a new dimension to my game. As you know, I like to score the goals, but I'm starting to set people up now, and I've set up a couple of chances here and there we haven't taken. But I've been happy with the start, and I just need to push on now and keep doing what I do and keep working hard, training every day. And when it comes to Friday night, hopefully you're in the team and just cement your place then, and hopefully just keep it going for the season. And as I said, though, just a couple more goals now and I'll be satisfied. But as you said, it's only early and we'll keep progressing.
Indeed. And, you know, the League of Ireland, we've seen, Stephen, in recent years, it's been very competitive. And no doubt, coming to the league, you knew what was in store. It's been almost impossible to call at the top of the table the past few years. I mean, we've seen St. Pat's, we've seen Sligo, we've seen the fantastic Shamrock Rovers team. Maybe this could be Bowes' year. It's so competitive.
That's unbelievably competitive. To be honest, I wasn't prepared of the competitive nature of the league. With regards to any team can beat anyone, there's no easy game in the League of Ireland, and I'm starting to learn that very quickly. Even UCD, people are going to go to Belfield and lose or drop points, so we were happy to get there early and we threw one away against Drogheda. But I'm telling you, we're far from ruling ourselves out, finishing very, very high. Obviously too early to predict a winner from any team, but we can only look at ourselves and beat what's in front of us on Friday night and stay positive throughout. Win and lose, we'll stay positive. And we've a great bunch of lads there in the dressing room. Everyone's getting on with everyone. It's a great team chemistry, and I think that's going to be playing an important role this year. And hopefully we can throw a very good cup run on top of a good league run, and just the world's our oyster then. Anything can happen, as I said, and anyone can beat anyone. So just we'll keep pushing on and do what we do best, and that's play good football and hopefully win games.
Indeed, and you're away to Dundalk, I think it is, next week, next Friday, 7:45 kickoff. Dundalk, of course, the Stephen Kenny factor. They're going to be looking, a lot of people are saying they could possibly mount a title challenge. They've got a lot of quality players there, and Dundalk, despite the heavy defeat that they suffered to Drogheda, they're going to be a bit of a challenge for any team going there.
Yeah, Dundalk, I played a good bit of 10th in the league last year, and I was very impressed with Dundalk with what bit I've seen of them. They've some very good experience in there and a very good bit of youth mixed in. So Stephen has a good few troops up there, but we're definitely not going in fearing them, and that's for sure. Even though we're away from home, I think we play a similar style to football. Our football Dundalk, we like to get the ball on the ground, play it from the back, and I think that's going to reflect well on Friday night with a cracking game between both teams. I've a bit of history there with Dundalk myself. Before I left for Iceland, I was actually up, and they offered me a deal, and the deal fell through, and they went into a bit of financial trouble when Sean was there, McCaffrey.
Yeah.
So I'll be putting in an extra sweet performance for myself on Friday as well.
Nice one. And what about your experience playing abroad? I know a lot of Irish players, it seems to be a bit of a trend now. A lot of youngsters tend to try it a further afield. I mean, yourself, you played in Iceland, Tindastóll, I think the team was. No doubt a very different type of experience for you.
Yeah, it was absolutely. But I tell you what, it matured me very much on and off the pitch. I left home when I was 18. I'm 25 now. I went away to America for 4 years, went over to college there, and then I was drafted into the MLS and got to experience a lot of different cultures, different styles of play. And I think that suits me well now, that I have a taste of different football from all these different parts of the world, and I think I can bring something different to teams that not many people have seen before. But Iceland was an experience in itself. It was my first stop after I'd done my knee. I'd done my cruise ship when I was in Puerto Rico. So to fight back there, and from the sunny beach of Puerto Rico to the...
Oh, yeah.
To the cold mountains of Iceland, it was a bit of a turn for the books, but as I said, no matter where I go, I'm happy kicking the football once I'm still healthy and playing well. So it's definitely an experience, but I wouldn't change it for the world, and it's good to finally be home now and playing at a big team like Bose.
Indeed, and for young players, you said you left at 18, and you know the likes of the USA and Canada, have you found different ways that they treat their footballers? Have they got a different approach to what we've seen over here? And do you think that maybe, are we trying to catch up over here to what these other countries have?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, Iceland, it's such a small country. Every single professional team has an academy starting so young, but they have a habit of just producing players into their leagues. Whereas I feel here, any sort of decent players that are at 13, 14, 15, they're going to England straight away, you know. I think our league suffers because of that. But then again, you turn around to a 15-year-old and say, you have a chance to go to England, they're going to take it 10 times out of 10, you know. So it is tough. I wouldn't say we're trying to catch up, but we definitely need to progress at the same rate that everyone else is.
Yeah, you see, because I keep hearing stories of, particularly in America now, Stephen, a lot of the colleges are taking soccer a lot more seriously than they would have done, say, 20 years ago, and proper scholarships are being put in place. And I remember seeing a YouTube video of, I think, a young American school. They were trying to play football the Barcelona way. So you can only imagine with the Americans, the amount of research that they're putting in. Your experience over there, do you think you've seen a lot that we might see that suggests we might see the America as a real football force going forward in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I went over there in 2007, and obviously football was still on the rise, and then Beckham went that year as well, and that just exploded the whole league. And they've baseball, American football, ice hockey, you know, basketball, obviously, and I don't think football will ever be as big as them.
Yeah.
It's definitely getting much more big, and you see all the kids, instead of a baseball in their hand, now they're playing football. And they're massive into their stats over there. There's stats for everything, as you said. And even when I was in college there, how many shots you take a game, many on target, many with your left, many with your right, they analyse the depths of your game. And you do learn a lot out of that, and I think that could be beneficial over here too, where as a young person, you can work on your weaknesses, like, you know, you're not using your left foot enough, or you're overusing your right, or you don't head the ball well, and I think that could develop our young kids really well.
And would you advise young players to try outside of the UK? Of course, there seems to be a culture here in Ireland, Stephen, of, you know, young players coming up through the clubs here of just wanting to get over to England at the first opportunity that they get. I know a lot of people are saying, well, why not try on the continent, or like yourself, go to Scandinavia or Iceland or America or somewhere like that?
Yeah, I would recommend the American route to anybody, especially a 14, 15, 16-year-old. Look, you have a long pro career ahead of you. Kids are jumping out at 12, 13, 14 now, and they leave with no junior circuit, you know, and God forbid they get released down at 17 or 18, they've absolutely nothing to fall back on. Whereas I took the conscious decision at 18, I had an offer from Shells here, and Pat Fennin was there, I had an offer up north. I said, look, I'm going to go over and get my education, still play college football at a very high level. But then if I got a serious injury or football didn't work out, I had a degree to fall back on, which I now have. And that came to fore after I'd done my cruciate. I turned around and go, imagine I did recover from my cruciate, I have the degree to fall back on. And I was never brilliant in school or anything. It was just a decision I took at 17, 18. So I've seen so many of my friends that I played with Shelburne throughout the years go over to England at a young age and then come back with absolutely nothing.
A bit of heartbreak as well.
Exactly, and it's a conveyor belt over there, you know. If you're not doing it, you're just straight out and doing the next one, you know. That's how competitive it is. Whereas if you go over to college in the States there, you've a bit of a safety net for 4 years. The scholarship's invested in you in 4 years. You're going to do your work. You're going to do your thing on the pitch, off the pitch. And obviously you get to experience a lot of different cultures. Whereas, in all fairness, England's very similar to Ireland, where, you know, you're not experiencing anything really different from home, you know. Whereas America, it's a massive place with so many things to see and do and learn. So, no, I definitely take a different route and then end up in Scandinavia. So, It's all about where the football is and where you're happy. It could be anywhere in the world. And my advice to any kid is just don't get your heart set in any England or wherever you need to go, you go. Don't be afraid to travel. Travel gives you the best experiences in life, I think.
I was thinking actually of Porrick Amond there as well, getting the experience in Portugal while you were saying that. But for you now that you've come back, it's probably fair to say you're not even yet in the prime of your career. To have all that experience and be back playing in the League of Ireland and making such an impact, I mean, things can only go up, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I only developed as a footballer, I feel myself, when I was 18 or 19, you know. I got a bit of muscle and I got a bit of size. So it's all about developing. When your time comes, you take it, you know. As I said, I'd done my knee and I wasn't sure if I was going to get back. And I worked myself into the ground to get me back into the best possible shape. And now I think finally for my career, things are starting to take a very positive turn. And starting the season here in Ireland so well. And no one really knows me in Ireland because I've done all my stuff away from home. So to come in and have a positive impact and play every game, every middle of every game is definitely going to be beneficial. I'll stand up and take notice of what I'm doing on the pitch can only benefit me in the long run.
Indeed, Stephen. Onwards and upwards, as I say. And best of luck at the weekend and best of luck for the season ahead. No doubt it's going to be a thrilling League of Ireland. And no doubt with your experience and now getting to play in a few positions, it's going to be interesting as well. You're hugely looking forward to what's ahead.
Yeah, I'm absolutely can't wait. And as I said, we'll take every game as it comes and I'll do my best for Bowls and hopefully get 3 points in as many games as we can and push as far as we can up the league and we'll take it from there.
Yes, a terrific chat with Stephen Beattie of Bohemians. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by two terrific Gall Ireland heads, Ronan Murphy and Ryan Kelly. Lads, thanks a million for joining us on the first edition of this fantastic new podcast all about Irish domestic soccer. A lot to talk about, lads, I think it's probably fair to say. We've got to start with the fantastic Dublin Derby. It was unbelievable to see. Ronan, I'll come to yourself first of all on this game. First blood to Rovers in the battle, I suppose, of supremacy here in Dublin. But I think a lot of the major talking points was all about Simon Madden. I mean, what a terrific performance.
Yeah, he's a great addition to the Rovers team. He really brings an extra attacking dimension that they probably were missing last year. And as well, after bringing in Kieran Marty Waters, so they really have the great wit compared to last year. So it's a much stronger squad that Trevor Crawley has, and they're top of the table already. So it looks like he has the team gelling early in the season, which is something that they kind of failed to do last year. And because of that, they probably slipped back and they were always playing catch up. But this season, I'd say they uh, they might be able to keep up that pace and stay in among the title contenders, maybe until the season end. Who knows?
Ryan Kelly, there has been a huge lot of truth of what Ronan said, particularly about them Shamrock Rovers starting sluggish in previous years. Since they had that fantastic year where they were in the Europa League and everything, it's been very difficult for them to get into their rhythm, but we've seen that happen early on this season. And of course, it's the big Shamrock Rovers Sligo Rovers battle so far. I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot more of them. They've added great players. Of course, we've said Simon Madden, Robert Bailey, Stephen MacPhail, a hugely experienced players. That extra talent has made them bigger and better than last season already, from what it looks like. Are they strong enough to mount a title challenge, do you think? I know it's early days.
Hello, Dave. Yeah, I think they're I think they've really Trevor Crowley's really bolstered the team with some good players. He's got a good mix of youth and experience, and in terms of like you said, you mentioned Stephen MacPhail there. He's also brought in Ryan Brennan, the likes of Luke Byrne at the back. These are among the best young players in Ireland, in the League of Ireland at the moment. And they really help going forward, as Trevor Crowley looks to go on and clinch, you know, push on for the league after doing well in the cups last season.
Yeah, and Ryan, you know, we talk about Sligo Rovers. You know, they've been the hot shots over the past few years. They're the expected big challengers this season, and they were looking so good pre-season. They had Eric Odhiambo. He scored in a hat-trick, actually, on his debut in the Setanta Cup, and people were thinking, yes, this Sligo Rovers team are going to get better and better, but so far they failed to gel in the league. They've suffered a 1-0 loss to Dundalk. What's going on with them?
I'm going to see how they respond tomorrow against, first of all, against Pats there in the Setanta Cup, and then they'll come up against Shamrock Rovers then in the league. Two big games for them to kind of to bounce back from the disappointing start to the league. I think if you look at last season, they kind of after their blistering start, they kind of fell off the pace a bit, and they never really recovered from it. And it looks to be more of the same this season. And when you look at their squad in comparison to the likes of Shamrock Rovers and others. And if you look at the likes of Shamrock Rovers and others and Pats, the champions, the way they've strengthened their team, Sligo haven't really done it in the same manner. Okay, they brought in Eric Odhiambo, who got off to a great start, but he hasn't really had the same impact as yet. The likes of Paul O'Connor, good midfielder, but is he really what they need pushing forward for the league? Caelan Spillan at the back, he's not. He played well for Cork last season, but I don't think he's up to the same standard as the likes of Gavin Pearce, who's unfortunately out for them at the moment. So it'll be very interesting to watch how they respond to those early season setbacks against Bray Wanderers and at the start of the season, you know.
Indeed. Ronan, for Dundalk to go to Sligo Rovers and get a win like that is a huge booster for them. I mean, it's so hard to judge how Dundalk will do this season. I mean, it was a late goal against Sligo Rovers, which got them the win. A lot of people will be asking the question, can they challenge again? You know, Stephen Kenny's side, they're no longer the surprise package. Players they've brought in, they're probably not of the same calibre of Pats or Shamrock Rovers, new additions. But if they have the know-how, and with Stephen Kenny's, the way he can mould a team, which we've seen in the past with Derry, they could certainly mount a challenge.
Well, I probably have a few people disagreeing with me for this, but I think Stephen Kenny is the best manager in the League of Ireland, and having that in your corner is as good a start as any. And I know he didn't bring in the big names, but he did actually splash some cash bringing in Daryl Horgan, so he should add something to the team. I know he hasn't scored yet, and he's admitted his own frustrations about not having scored yet for Dundalk, but goals will come for him, and he's a really talented young player, and I'm sure Cork are sad to have lost him, because Billy Dennehy isn't really quite the player he is. He's starting well down there, but he's not the player Horgan is. So if Dundalk can kind of repeat the form of last season with Towell and Hoban and a few of the others kind of maintaining the form and scoring the goals the same way they did in last season, I don't think they're going to be the same surprise package, but they don't necessarily need to be. As long as they're consistent and they can churn out the results like they won against Sligo at the weekend, that'll definitely make a difference.
Ryan, would you go along with that? Ronan says he has a lot of people disagreeing with him that Stephen Kenny is one of the best managers in the league, but he believes they could make a difference. He mentioned the likes of Towell there and Macmillan, another one. What do you think, Ryan?
Well, initially at the start of the season, I wasn't too, as Ronan says, they didn't really bring in as many what you might call big names. And as a result of that, I kind of thought that they were going to fall behind their rivals. And at the start of the season, they kind of proved me right. Whenever they didn't just lose against their loud rivals Drogheda, they were absolutely humiliated by them.
Yeah, a painful one for them to take. Yeah, all right, yeah.
And they had a difficult start there in the Setanta Cup. But in fairness to them, they really have shown a lot of resilience to turn that tie around against Coleraine in Coleraine at the Showgrounds. And they look strong there against Shamrock Rovers. You know, they've done Stephen Kenny's obviously rallied the troops and reminded them of the quality that exists in the squad that pushed them on last season to challenge for the title. So I definitely think that you will see them this year round again there or thereabouts. Whether or not it'll be enough to challenge or to win the league is another question, but they definitely have quality, and with the likes of Horgan and Toll and Hoban, you know, and Hoban, sorry, these guys are like Shamrock Rovers players, the likes of Luke Byrne and the likes of Ryan Brennan. These guys are among the top players in the league, so they should be there.
Indeed, they will. Ronan, you mentioned, just to bring you back on a point you were talking about players from Cork and that, and we actually looking at Cork, we've seen they're ticking along rather nicely, it's probably fair to say, sitting second in the table, actually joined top really with Shamrock Rovers, and they had another good win at home to Bray Wanderers, 3-1 there. Could they be staking a claim? I know they've had so much struggles in the past and it's been very difficult for Cork, but the fans have really stuck by them and they've been developing, you know, as slowly but surely. There's serious players in there, the likes of Billy Dennehy, as we were saying, and Colin Healy as well. He's another good one in there.
Yeah, Cork, they do have a strong enough squad, and John Caulfield seems to have brought in some decent young players, especially from the Munster Senior League, which were probably unheralded and people weren't expecting them to come out with the box so quickly. But he seems to be doing the right things down there, and it's shown with the crowds they're drawing to Turner's Cross. There's thousands turning up every weekend. So I think Cork might have replaced Derry as the new conveyor belt of talent. They're after winning the under-19 league now 3 seasons in a row, so there's definitely loads of young players coming through there, and it's good to see. They do have a fair bit of talent on the books. Elding is after coming in, he's injured at the moment, but when he gets fit, he should definitely get the goals to propel him up the table. And Brian Lenehan is looking like one of the most talented young players in the league at the moment. He's being played as a makeshift right back, but he's a central midfielder naturally. But he looks to have all the ability that he can play wherever he likes, and he'll still come up with the goods. Yeah, so I think that Cork, they should definitely end up in a top half finish if not challenged for the title, and maybe have a good go at one of the cups, maybe have a good cup run, and sure, who knows, they might end up in Europe next season.
Indeed, we'll see. It'll be great to see them getting back there to Europe. It'd be really fantastic. Ryan, to come to yourself, and one of the major talking points over the last few weeks in the League of Ireland has been the poor facilities, which we've seen in Derry recently when in the match between Derry and Cork. I think John Caulfield described the pitch as being like a cobbled street, and the facilities at Bray have also been questioned. Ryan, just a few weeks into the season, you know, this isn't acceptable for League of Ireland football at all. It's not acceptable for any sport, I suppose.
Absolutely not, Dave. After seeing the Shamrock Rovers Derry City game, or sorry, the Cork City Derry City game at the Brandywell, I thought that the Brandywell surface was the worst I'd seen it in a long time. And I think that's what led to Caulfield describing it in such scathing terms. I think what needs to be addressed there is the people that are looking after the facilities. They really need to start. They really need to get a bit of pressure put on them in terms of how the pitches and the facilities are used by local teams. For example, in Derry, the pitch is used. It's used an awful lot. It's ever since the season ended there, the League of Ireland season ended, there's been a lot of games, a lot of junior games played on it. So I think local councils and communities need to work together to work in the best interests of the clubs and prioritize these things that are happening, just to make sure that it doesn't happen as the season progresses, you know.
Yeah, there has been a lot of politics, actually, Ryan, behind it with the local councils, as you said, and people working together. And I actually cheekily put the question on Twitter there 2 weeks ago about, because I know it was the same weekend Dublin were playing Derry in the GAA Allianz League, and Derry got a good win there over Dublin. But the pitch at Celtic Park, I think a lot of people were saying, was a lot better than that at the Brandywell, and people couldn't understand why is it? Is it purely, you reckon, down to the fact that there's too many games being played on it, or the local councils and that are not looking after it right?
I think it's certainly a combination of the two, Dave. The councils, they're kind of up against it with the cutting of budgets and stuff. So they want to use the facilities, and but it's to the detriment of clubs such as Derry City, where the surfaces aren't getting time to recover from intensive matches being played and trained on, and so for Derry City in particular, I think that it just highlights the severe, chronic lack of facilities that the club has to work with. I mean, they've been training in fantastic facilities over pre-season out in the Vale Centre in Greysteel, which is, it's among the best in the Northwest, actually. But then they're training on those great surfaces out there, and then they're coming and playing matches, competitive games, and it's not making life easy for them.
Ronan, it won't bring many fans back to the ground if they're seeing the football being played on really bad surfaces and, players struggling to get the ball down to their feet and actually knock it about.
Yeah, that's definitely the big problem with not having good surfaces. It's not that you mind at the fact you're playing in a ploughed field, but the players themselves, they're going to have to go direct more often than playing the short passing game that fans probably want to see. We've heard it with the national team for the entire Trapattoni era that isn't what fans want to see, that they're more interested in the slick passing game, and they want every team to be Barcelona and Real Madrid in the Clásico from the other night. But I think if a game is in the Brandywell, I don't think they're going to have the same facilities, or they're going to have the same enjoyment if the teams are forced to play a more direct game. And even some of the other grounds, the Carlisle grounds, I know there were Ian Barraclough was given out after Sligo Rovers played there. So it's not just confined to Derry. It seems to be a more widespread thing around the grounds in Ireland, which is a real shame, especially this early in the season.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. Yes, you were listening there to the fantastic League of Ireland Goalmouth. We were talking to Ryan Kelly and Ronan Murphy, along with Bowes player, striker, midfielder. He's playing a bit of everywhere. Stephen Beattie, was terrific to have him on the show this week. Now I'm delighted to be joined by Trevor Keane of Sports News Ireland, and welcoming him back to the Why Big Football Show after quite a while is Gareth Morgan, editor of the Matchday programme for Perth Glory all the way in Australia. Gareth, you're welcome back. You're working in a shack in Dublin. You call yourself a John Walters type journalist, providing a very good quality programme every week.
Yeah, it's very kind of you to say so, Dave. Yeah, well, don't want to blow our own trumpet. We have been nominated for an award. It's not a Pulitzer Prize, but it's a little publications award over there. But yeah, still doing glory days for Perth Glory and all across the A League and also football in Ireland and UK. And recently been to my first couple of League of Ireland games as well, and thoroughly enjoyed those.
Terrific stuff. I'd say you have a lot of late nights considering the hours in Australia and having to integrate what you're doing in with the guys back there.
I do indeed. Some very late nights and some very early mornings. So yeah, you do get used to it though.
Excellent stuff. Well, I want to get cracking, lads, just before we leave the Why Big Football show, because I want to talk, probably one of my favourite parts of the show, as we talk about how the Irish players did at the weekend. And to come to yourself, Trevor, first, and looking at Shane Long, I think one of the mostly talked about Irish players over the weekend, his goal and very good performance, albeit a lot of people said there was a little bit of a dive in there, but playing against his old club, he didn't celebrate. What do you make of this not celebrating against your own club kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that was probably good at the start or when somebody did it, but I mean, you score a goal, I mean, you celebrate it. I mean, thank God it's not a journeyman like I don't know, I can't think top of my head, but a Dean Windus, he'd never get a chance maybe to celebrate or, you know, or to he'd always be celebrating. Sorry, I mean, look, you score a goal, you celebrate. A club took a chance on him, he scored a goal for them. You know, okay, he was sold by West Brom. Celebrate your goal. That's the way I look at it. I don't understand this respect. I mean, the club didn't show him too much respect when they were happy to sell him in January. So, you know, it's
celebrate the goal.
Celebrate your goal. Celebrate your goal.
Gareth, to come to yourself on this, Trevor says celebrate your goal. Alan Shearer was making the point on Match of the Day, saying he couldn't understand why West Brom sold Shane Long. I know in the first transfer window, I think last year, just at the end of it, he was nearly going to Hull. It was very close, but then he finally got his move in the transfer window just gone. And he's been a very good player for Hull City, especially with the partnership with Jelovic.
He has indeed. And just going back to Trevor's point there, I do agree with Trevor to a certain extent. I think it's slightly different if perhaps you've made, you know, 400 appearances for a club, which is increasingly rare these days. I guess if you went back to that club then and, you know, were cavorting in front of the home end, that's slightly different to not celebrating against a team that maybe you made 3 loan appearances for back in 2007. I do think it's got a little bit out of hand and a little bit cliched. So I certainly would agree with Trevor in that respect. Shane Long, I'm a big fan of. I saw him a lot when he was at Reading and had a couple of superb seasons for them. I know he's got his critics. I know he's not the most natural finisher in the world by any means, but without wanting to lapse into cliche, his work rate is absolutely superb. He does carve out chances for other players. And I thought he was a little bit harshly criticised for the penalty incident. I mean, he did go down a little bit easily, but he bounced straight back up and he didn't. There were no theatrics, no appealing to the referee for the penalty. He went looking for the ball and then the referee is given the spot kick. So he strikes me as a fairly honest player. I don't think he'd be one to go down particularly easily. So I thought he was a little bit slighted there. And I think he's, for a club like Hull, I think he's a real asset.
And Gareth, would you agree with Alan Shearer that West Brom were daft to sell him?
Oh, well, it was certainly a very, very puzzling decision from West Brom. And I guess you've got to look where they are at the moment in the league. They're staring down the barrel of going down. They're not exactly rattling the goals in. And I think it was a very, very foolish decision. I think, as I said, for a club like Hull, he's a great player to have on the books. And I think you'd have to put West Brom in the same sort of category of clubs as Hull City. So a very poor decision from them, in my opinion.
Trevor, another Irish player that really had a fantastic game at the weekend, making it 2 great games in 2 weeks, was Wes Houlihan of Norwich City. Really, a lot of people tipped Sunderland to actually finally get a result in Norwich, but it wasn't to be. Norwich completely dominant from start to finish. And Wes, at the heart of everything that was good.
Yeah, I mean, it's ever since he's come back from the Ireland-Serbia game, he's been kind of back in the Norwich side. So I suppose when we were talking in the lead up to the Serbian game, we were kind of talking, going, you know, it's a shame that, you know, as he's finally making establishing himself in the Irish side, that he's struggling at Norwich. But, you know, looks like you know, Chris Hughton caught that game with Serbia, and especially the first half when he looked lively in some of the true balls, and he's benefited at club level. So it's great to see him back in, and I mean, 4 points from the last three games with him back in the side, I mean, it's certainly going to help Norwich. And to be honest, I think they look a more balanced side with him in there.
Yeah, I know a few people have been compiling stats. I think Joe McCarthy, for one, has been of the performances of Norwich with Wes in the squad and those without. I mean, a lot of people will argue that maybe in some games when they come up against the big teams that are strong and powerful, Wes has a bit of a tough time, but I think you need a player like that if you're ever going to create a chance. And Trevor, if Wolfswinkel had managed to convert even half of the chances that Wes put on his plate, Norwich would have won by maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah, well, just come back. I mean, on the point of you know, how he does against bigger clubs, if you've got a player that can unlock, you know, defenses in the teams around you, well, then you utilize that. And then against the bigger sides, if you don't think he's got the mental strength or the strength, or you don't believe he can put in the performance, then you adjust it around. I mean, you see Liverpool when they're at Anfield, you know, Philip Coutinho and Sterling are in the side, and then when they go away, Joe Allen comes in.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems to be the play. So you have to play to your strengths. And you know, Hoolahan is one of those players. Yes, he can create a chance for you, and yes, he's fantastic in the hole. But maybe for a away game, you know, he mightn't be the kind of player you need. And I suppose that's the beauty of football, that you adapt your tactics as you need them. And, you know, if Houghton thinks he needs, you know, somebody stronger in there for an away game, you know, because, you know, I know he's great in the ball and he's great in locking defences, but, you know, he is slight in build, you know, and there could be concerns over his strength against, say, a Yaya Toure or somebody a bit more physical. So, you know, you have to adjust for your games, you know. So, you know, in that regard, you can't blame Norwich for the way they're playing it. But I think at the moment, he's settling into the side. He looks good and he's playing good football. And if he's in confidence, that's great. And it can only benefit Norwich.
Gareth, Roberto Martinez has rubbished the rumours that Seamus Coleman could be joining back up with David Moyes at Manchester United. When he was asked about it, he said, "You must be talking about a different Seamus Coleman. He's had a good season for Everton, and that goes on with Everton winning, beating Swansea at the weekend. But this player, he's well wanted, but he seems to be quite loyal to Everton. I can see him probably staying at Everton for the foreseeable future."
Well, I certainly think so, and I hope so from an Everton point of view. I guess he might have looked at the decision Leighton Baines made earlier in the year or last year, heavily linked with a move to Manchester United, of course, and decided to stick with Everton. And I think it's fantastic news from an Irish perspective to see Seamus Coleman playing so well. I think it's 7 goals that he's chipped in now, a massive contribution. You know, from a defender, as he is played primarily by Everton. I know occasionally they do push him up into a more advanced position. And I think as well, his accuracy from set pieces at international level, you know, those things are so important where defences are often difficult to unlock in open play. So, yeah, fantastic to see him doing so well. And I think he might be better served staying at Everton. I honestly do, just at the moment. I think if they can avoid qualifying for the Europa League, strange as that may sound, I think we could probably expect quite a big season from them next year. Maybe a couple of extra players on board. Bigger things for them as a team, and hopefully bigger things for Coleman himself.
Yeah, the only thing, Gareth, I will say about that is the fact that we always tend to say this about Irish players. They do remain loyal to the club. I know when Kevin Doyle had been in the prime of his career, he was linked with a good few higher clubs. It seems like, I think Damien Duff and Robbie Keane, to an extent, when he went to Liverpool, were the only two Irish players having been linked that actually were a little bit more selfish about it. Is that a problem? Because we seem to have a lot of Irish players that aren't playing with the top clubs, and, you know, maybe do you think Irish players do have to think about themselves once in a while?
Yeah, I think they do. I guess everyone's individual circumstances are different. You've got to factor in, you know, will you be playing on a regular basis, I guess, before you decide whether to move to a bigger club, in inverted commas. I guess Seamus is, I think he's 25 now.
Yeah.
So you'd say that he's, you know, he's approaching his peak in the next 2 or 3 years. And he might have a, you know, an interesting decision to make depending on whether he signs another contract at Everton. But I think it's difficult to generalise, Dave, to be honest, in terms of players and their loyalty and, you know, whether their Irish nationality comes into play there, whether it's a national characteristic to have that loyalty or not. It'd be very hard to say, I think.
Yeah, Trevor, what about our strikers? I mean, Robbie Keane, we've seen a pretty good goal for LA Galaxy there last week. He seems to be the only striker to be scoring. I know it's great to see Leon Best back in action at Sheffield Wednesday, scoring a couple of goals after a really bad run of injuries for him. But are we still so reliant on Robbie Keane being okay and putting in the goals? And once he's doing it every week for his club, we'll be grand. We can always rely on him for international.
I think at the moment, probably Keane, he remains our best striker. I mean, he's benefiting from being over in the MLS, you know, the fewer games, the probably not as competitive as, say, the Premier League and quite possibly the Championship. And, he's enjoying his football. And I think that's, that's probably a large part of it when you come into international football, that if you're playing at, you know, at a relatively strong level, you're scoring goals and you're in a good, happy place, then, you know, it can extend your career beyond what you might have normally, you know, if he was playing in the rigors of the Premier League, for example. So I think from that regard, he probably remains our number one at the moment. But, you know, I think the fact that, you know, and we spoke about the start long, you know, he looks happy since he's gone to Hull. And I think that will help him there playing in that environment. And, you know, you mentioned Leon Best. Leon Best is probably... he's a bit of an enigma in recent times. It didn't quite happen for him at Blackburn. He infuriated fans with some of his antics, and especially his social media comments. And I think at Newcastle, he might have been unlucky to be shipped off. I mean, he made a stunning start and then kind of in Premier League when they got back into the Premier League and was then sold after injury. So it would be good to see someone like that maybe emerge, you know, and make a stake for a claim. But we have a kind of a pool of strikers, but none that are as prolific as Keane, or none that will potentially reach that level. So it would definitely be good to see somebody kind of younger coming through. I mean, one guy that always pops into my head, and it's probably been based on Kilkenny, but is young Mickey Drahan. You know, he's at Portsmouth at the moment. He could certainly make the grade if Sean Maguire at Sligo, if he can make the step up and get the physical development to the nimble feet he has, then, you know, they're two guys just at the top of the head that could potentially make the breakthrough, you know, and that's what we need. We need somebody to make the breakthrough and capture the imagination there again.
I know a lot of people have had a look at Robbie Keane's goal against Real Salt Lake the other week. It's worth checking out Paddy Madden's goal for Scunthorpe against Burton, if you get the chance. I know Paddy's sort of fallen off the international radar a little bit, but he did score a screamer there. And another player who's caught my eye is Samir Carruthers, who I know is just picked up a knee injury and will be out for a few months. But I wonder if he might not be converted into a striker from a winger at some point in the future. Good player, in my opinion.
Yeah, got a lot of goals for Aston Villa in the Next Gen series there not so long ago. A player we do tend to mention quite a lot on the Why Big Football show at the MK Dons on loan from Aston Villa. Hopefully we'll make the grade and make the big step up. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here, lads, on the Why Big Football show. My thanks to Trevor Keane and Gareth Morgan for joining me, and of course all our other guests. It's been a fun-filled, packed-up week of Irish soccer, and we look forward to doing it all again next week. Fasten your seatbelt, the roller coaster will continue. From myself, Dave O'Grady, here on Freak FM, have a very good evening.